Welcome to Spiritual Cartels Principles Meeting. Tonight, we're looking at the principle of courage. This week, I'm pleased to introduce Anthony B., who has kindly agreed to come and share for us. So, Anthony, over to you.
Thank you, Helen. My name's Anthony B. I'm a grateful recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous, and I've found it necessary now to pick up heroin, crack cocaine, cocaine, prescription drugs, private doctors, national health doctors, or prison doctors, or alcohol since February 2015. I'm just going to pray, to set aside prayer. God, today, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery, so I may have an open mind and have a new experience of all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen. As I said, I'm a grateful recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous, and I say I'm recovered because the book tells me I'm recovered, but it also tells me I'm not cured. What it actually tells me is that I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So every day is a day that I have to bring God's vision in to my day. And God, how best can I serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. And thank you, Purdy, for asking me to be a service. And thank you for your service, Ellen, and everybody else who's doing service on here tonight. So I just want to kind of, spiritual principle is courage, but I'm just going to run through the principles of the steps. The first step's about honesty. The second step's about hope. The third step's about faith. The fourth step is about courage. The fifth step is about integrity. The sixth step is about willingness. The seventh step is about humility. The eighth step is about brotherly love. The ninth step is about forgiveness and responsibility. Now, the first nine steps are there to deflate my ego. And then 10, 11, and 12, step 10 is about perseverance. Step 11 is about spiritual awareness. And step 12 is about service. And 10, 11, and 12 is there to try and keep my ego deflated. And I'm just going to give you a couple of acronyms for courage. I'm just going to qualify myself. I picked up around 1975. I must have been about 9 years of age. I like the effect it produced. It hit the spot. I took to it like a duck took to the water, and that went on until 2015. I visited a few detoxes, treatment centers, prisons. None of them were sufficient enough to suffice to restore me to sanity and remove that merciless obsession. I believe by the grace of God, the spirit of the fellowship, good sponsorship, and getting connected to a power greater than myself, my mind's not given way, as I said, since February 2015 to want to pick up any A-class drugs, prescription drugs, or alcohol. So the acronyms for courage, the first one is continuing onward under rigorous and grinding experiences. And the second one is connection, outward focus, unity, resilience, authenticity, and empathy. Because I was full of fear and I never knew that until I come into recovery. I'd wake up in a ball of fear and I'd go to bed in a ball of fear. Fear of abandonment, fear of betrayal, fear of rejection, fear of losing what I had, fear of not getting what I want, fear of thinking that the grass was greener on the other side, and it never was. So in that first step, I fully conceded. I made the 100% admission. I was powerless, and I suffered from a seemingly state of mind and body. I accepted the second half of step one, and when I made that full concession, that to my innermost self, that was to God as I understand God. So that shows me my problem. It gives me all the information. Step one, and what I suffer with, and the only way I'm going to put some distance between me and step one is by working the other 11 steps, the suggested ideals. Step two shows me my solution, and it gives me hope as well, and step three shows me where the action needs to start. And when I got down on my knees and I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it, I said the prayer, God, offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me from the bondage of self so I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties and victory over them so I bear witness to those I would help, the power and I love and the way I like. May I do thy will always. And I kind of said something to God before I said it. And I said to God, I'll do whatever you want me to do, God. Just please keep me clean. Please keep me sober. And it's a prayer that I've implemented into my prayer life every day. I do, I've done it with sponsors. I do it with sponsees, and it's a beautiful prayer. So the principle of courage in step four, the spiritual principle of courage lies behind step four. And the definition of courage is the ability to do something that frightens us or to have strength in the face of pain or grief. Here we summon the courage to honestly look deep within. This is a fact-finding, fact-facing process. You know, I needed to get the skeletons out of my closet. You know, I needed to go down deep and dig, you know, and that's what I've done. You know, I needed to go right down and do some soul searching. It says we've done a search and a fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We look at how our behavior has become warped to justify our continued behavior. That's what I used to do. I'd justify it. I'd rationalize it. I'd minimize it. My ego, I didn't know anything about ego. My ego would either want me to maximize it or minimize it, justify it or rationalize it. You know, and four is about honestly assessing who we are and how we got and how we get and we got to be better. So, yes, looking at the causes and conditions of our alcoholic addict and other addictive behaviors can be pretty frightening. So, I remember when I first looked at Step Four, I looked at the scrolls. I went into a face-to-face meeting when I was about 24, and I looked at Step Four. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest. You know, the book describes me really well. I was a cannot and a will not. I've made many resolutions, but never a decision. I had many lurking notions and reservations about this program, you know, and I was just in denial. And that's the insidiousness of this illness, really. The cunning, baffling feature is denial. There's a book. I mean, there's a story at the back of the book, Crossing the River of Denial. And the woman who wrote the story, she says, denial is very cunning, it's very baffling, and it's very powerful. And the ego is very insidious as well. It's very cunning, it's very baffling, and it's very powerful. You know, so especially if we've never done it before. And I'd never done a step four until I come into recovery, but I was told, get down on your knees and ask God to be fearless and to be thorough. And people who told me that, they'd been in this program for a couple of decades, you know. And it says, and that's precisely why this step demands courage. And as we progress further and see that life itself, you know, often demands courage, courage to finish taking our steps, to tell the truth, to face something scary, or for some, just walking into a new meeting, that takes courage. You know, walking into a new job. I remember when I first started my first form of employment when I come into recovery, you know, and or into a relationship change, you know. But once we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the power greater than us, we are now at step four. So when I done that, you know, I knew that I had to walk through this with courage because this was the last house on the block. It's jails, it's institutions, it's dereliction, and it's death. What's the institutions? Detox centers, treatment centers, sanitariums, psychiatric units, you know, or whatever it may be. You know, and it says, you know, it demands the courage, part because we now have, you know, I have a new employer now, you know, who is helping me. And ultimately, this employer, aka I call God, you know, is a source from where I draw my courage, you know. So we have learned in the past that not facing anything was our course, you know, was well, I was in denial. You know, I emotionally avoid things, you know, and until I started doing this stuff, until I started, you know, working the steps of a sponsor, you know, praying, taking inventory, you know, getting closer to God, identifying my defects, you know, and going back to make restitution, reconciliation, amends, and then living in 10, 11, and 12 today and trying to live there to the best of my God-given ability on a daily basis. You know, and in step four, you know, we asked ourselves to be fearless about the truth of ourselves, and that requires courage. We must remember, I must remember, that this step is a fact-finding mission. Because it talks about it in the book, doesn't it? You know, it says getting rid of the old stock and replacing it with the new. Resentment is the number one offender. You know, destroys more alcoholics than anything. From its stem, all forms of spiritual dis-ease, it says. You know, if I'm in that mode and that state of mind, my equilibrium's upside down. You know, and it talks about spiritual sickness as well. So that's the spiritual malady. You know, and the only it says it's a promise in the book. It says, once a spiritual malady's overcome, we straighten out physically and mentally. And so, you know, I must remember that this step is a fact-finding mission, and we bring to light defects that have kept us in those we care in utter darkness. The process of courage is taking step four, brings us back into the light. So I'm just going to read this quickly. It's a little bit of scripture. It says this. It says, let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. That's Lamentations 3:40. And there's another bit of scripture. It says in Luke 12:2-3, it says, nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on the housetops. So for me, you know, it's really nice to watch the process of other people when I'm sponsoring people as well, being relieved of, you know, so much secrecy. My first step four with a sponsor, he gave me 14 days and I had it done within 17 days. But I'd already started scratching away at the process in the treatment center. You know, and the first one I'd done, I left it on the side for a week. And I said to the counselor, you need to get me a bit more time. He said, we can't. He said, this guy's booked up. He's coming in tomorrow morning to do your step five. So I just got down on my knees and I asked God to give me the courage. And I just, to the best of my God-given ability, come out. And I'd done a step five of him the next day. Then I left the treatment facility and I went onto a day program. My first sponsor, I met him at a meeting whilst I was still in treatment, called Living in the Solution. And he said to me, go on to that first and do that, and then we'll go through the work. So I went and went through the steps on this day program. I've done another four and five there. But by now, I'm on my knees praying every morning. I'm bringing God into the equation, because on my own volition, you know, I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest. So I need God's help to help me to be honest. And then I went through with my first sponsor. I went through the steps five times in my first 18 to 20 months of being here, various ways, workshops, with a sponsor, on the day program, a few retreats, and I've continued to do it as well, you know. And so we learn from this principle how to become totally and completely trusting that our God will walk us through anything, even fear. So the first step, I can't. Second step, you can. Third step, I'm going to let you. Right? Thy will, not mine, be done. And it says, we believe that God doesn't bring us this far only to dump us with this step in life. We move on, but do not forget our past, and actually comes to terms with them. A sense of peace can often be found in having courage. So I walk through fear with courage, you know, but I've got to pray to do that. I walk by faith, not by sight. Yeah. So courage is not an absence of fear. It is deciding that something is more important than our fear and acting on it. Okay. So embracing courage, navigating through to step four. So recovery is a journey of personal growth, discovery and healing. And each step in the 12-step program offers a unique challenge, an opportunity to development. Step four makes a searching and finished moral inventory of ourselves, is often one of the most daunting stages, requiring a great deal of courage. My first sponsor, he said to me, listen, he said, in this process, you're going to be taking your head for a shit. I went, well, he said, you're going to be taking your head for a shit. Yeah, right. And a couple of other people said to me, look, it's about getting the skeletons out of the closet. It's a fact-finding, fact-facing process. So let's delve into why courage is crucial in this phase and how you can cultivate it to move forward in your recovery with strength and resilience. So understanding step four is a call to embark on a deep and often difficult introspective journey. It involves examining our past behaviours, relationships and decisions to uncover patterns that we may have contributed to our addiction. So it talks about it on page 66 of the book. It says, we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. And what it's talking about, the fourth column, where am I at fault, where am I at blame? It says it on page 67. What are my mistakes in the equation, the circumstance or the situation? Right? Because I thought when I first looked at step four, and then I looked at step nine when I was 24 years of age, you know, page 61 really describes me really well. It talks about, 60 talks about an actor. You know, 61 talks about the hypocrite. You know, I'm pointing out, blaming the blame game and the ego. And then the root of my problem, selfish and self-centeredness, until I started doing this stuff, you know, and the fact fight. It talks about the futility, the fatality, and the destructive nature of the fourth column, which are my defects. And I found out it was a defect looking for a character, you know. And then it says, this process isn't about self-judgment, but about self-awareness, recognizing the good and the bad with equal honesty. You know, in step seven, it says, you know, you can have all of me. But after I've done the step five and he give me my defects, he also give me my assets. So facing the past, it takes a significant amount of bravery to confront uncomfortable truths about oneself. You know, I had to be fearless and thorough and realize to see I was extremely prideful, egotistical, self-pity, morbid reflection, jealous, envious, suspicious, self-centeredness, self-arrogance, self-righteousness, insincere, extremely dishonest, extremely intolerant, extremely impatient, you know, extremely lustful, infidelity, irresponsibility, you know, and the list went on. Fear, you know, cowardness, all that stuff. You know what I mean? I put on that, all these masks, all these personas, you know, the IGS syndrome, that imaginary gangster syndrome. And, you know, what is a mask? What is it? What is a persona? It's a mask. And what is it? If you look it up in Latin, that's exactly what it is. It's a mask. So this is about a character change. This is where I need to walk through with courage, you know, and this is where I need to keep watching myself, because it's a continuation in step 10 and 11. It's a continuation for me to keep watching for selfishness manifesting into various ways, dishonesty manifesting into various ways, you know, resentment. From that stem all forms of spiritual disease, jealousy, envy, judgment, critical, you know, all that stuff. And so I've got to start watching myself. And this is where the fact-finding, fact-facing process first takes place. You know, and I start self-examining myself. There's two types of inventory. There's a spiritual inventory and there's the written inventory. And it says dealing with discomfort. So the introspection required in step four can stir up with intense emotions and memories. What does resentment mean? It means to refill. It's a French word. It demands the courage to face these feelings without the old defense mechanisms, because my ego wants to defend. See, what this is an ego deflator. Is what it is. Yeah, the first nine steps are there to deflate the ego. And this is where the ego starts to get deflated. You know, and it demands the courage to face these feelings about the old defense mechanisms of denial or substance use. So it's like the tip of the iceberg, right? Do you know what I mean? It's only an eighth over the sea level. I need to dig under. I need to have the courage to go under. Committing to honesty, complete honesty with oneself is perhaps the most challenging aspect of step four. It involves not only acknowledging the negative, but also recognizing and appreciating the positive traits and accomplishments in your life. I mean, I don't know about any of you lot. I come here full of shame, full of guilt, full of remorse. So I've been prideful all my life, coming to an agreement with that spirit of pride, then the shame, the guilt, the regret, the remorse, you know, low self-worth, low self-esteem, self-condemnation. I've got a catalogue of destruction behind me. But I knew this was the last house on the block. I didn't want to go back. I knew that I needed to go forward. And God had given me the opportunity of changing that traffic light from red, amber to green, you know, and I knew that God would move the mountain, but I had to bring the shovel. Some action needed to take place. You know, and it says committing to honesty, complete honesty with oneself is perhaps the most challenging aspect of step four. It involves not only acknowledging the negative, as I said, but also recognizing and appreciating the positive traits and accomplishments in your life. You know, because I found that I was a sick person trying to get well, you know. So cultivating courage, building the courage needed for step four doesn't happen overnight. But here are some strategies to help you develop this essential quality. Support system, network, yeah? Lean on your support group, sponsors. If you've got a therapist, use therapists. I mean, I've done a bit of that as well, psychotherapy. I had about 36 sessions of that. Do you know what I mean? I experienced a bit of trauma as a kid, but that don't define me as an addict or an alcoholic. You know, sharing your fears and experiences with others, you know, there's power in that. Sharing experience, strength and hope, you know, identifying, you know, and with others, and understand who understand it can significantly lessen the burden and reinforce your courage. Do you know what I mean? You know, when I'm identifying with somebody, I can relate to that. Like, yeah, I went through that. This is what I've done. I moved from a problem into a solution. Well, they can give me the solution. You know, small steps, break down the inventory process into manageable parts, tackling a little at a time can prevent. I mean, I've been through step fours. My first one's going to be 14 days, but I've gone from quicker processes as well. But what I'd strongly suggest, if you're new, don't hang about, just get on with it. The quicker you can go, I would say to people I work with, I'll give them a 4 to 6 week window, and I say the quicker you can get it done is for your benefit, not for my benefit. Do you know what I mean? All I'm letting you know is that, try not to sit in it for too long. And so time can prevent an overwhelm and help you see progress, making the task less daunting. Mindfulness and meditation practices, like mindfulness and meditation, can improve emotional regulation and anxiety management, provided you can calm and focus needed to face the truth. So, my experience is I prayed before I'd done it, and I prayed after I put it down, and I went back to it, and I just kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And before I know it, the pen was just flowing. It was just flowing. So, journaling as well, writing down your thoughts, you can do that as you're going through the day, because once you set the process off, you can start taking notes as you're going through your day. I don't know where you're at or what you're doing, but you can do that as you're going along through your day, whether you're in a work environment or whatever you're doing, and just keep going through with courage. And it's only the ego, see, that wants to make you feel like you're unique. It wants to separate, but the spirit wants to unify. I guarantee you, not any one of you people on this platform tonight have not done what others people have not done in any of the 12-step fellowships. And then it says emotional resources. So read books, listen to podcasts, or attend workshops about courage and recovery. For me, I got right in the middle. I had five commitments when I first got here. It was before the pandemic. And I got right in the middle. And I still do that today. I still do that today because I can't get complacent with this thing. And it says confronting the process in them. Learning more about both can demystify the process and equip you with strategies to handle it. As I said, I went through in different ways, in 5 times my first 18 months. And that's, it's different schools of sponsorship. As long as it starts at step one and it's through the literature and it finishes at step 12, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? You get different ways to take people through the work. I mean, so while step four demands a great deal of courage, it is also a step that fosters significant personal growth. It really does. When I reflect back on my experience with step four, and I'm working with others, and I'm with a sponsor, and I'm sharing some of my stuff with him to encourage him to talk about himself as well. By confronting your past and your innermost self, you lay a foundation for a sober, more self-aware future. Remember, courage does not mean the absence of fear, but the determination to face it. Each small act of bravery builds a pathway to a new, empowered life of recovery. I remember someone saying to me when I first came in, if you put half the passion you did into your using and boozing into your recovery, you stand a very good chance of sustaining it. And then someone else, another fellow, said to me, and I didn't like it when he said it to me at the time. He went, "This ain't all about you anymore." He said, "Your experience is there to benefit others. This work was designed to work with others. By you going through this process, it's a fact-finding, fact-facing process and finding out about yourself, your experience is going to be there to benefit others." So always have that in mind when you're reading or you're doing stuff that is going to benefit someone else. Do you understand what I'm saying? And as you continue to navigate your recovery, keep in mind that every step forward, no matter how small, is a victory. Spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, right? But as long as you're making some spiritual progress every day, whether it just be a couple of inches, you're making progress. Do you know what I mean? Embrace the journey with courage, knowing that each step is a building block. It's a building block, right? It's a building block to your recovery, right? Every step. But this one is like, it's kind of like a big all fences. Once you've got over it, then you find the courage to just keep moving on and keep moving on and keep moving on and continuing and keeping to continue, right? And it will bring you a healthy and fulfilling life, believe me, because it has me. My experience is it's brought me a healthy and fulfilling life. Right, so I'm just going to delve into the book a bit, because there is a prayer behind every step. There's a spiritual principle behind every step. And if I'm obedient and I've got the courage to walk through with obedience and just follow the recipe, trust God, clean house, help others, you know, and get to doing what I need to do, meeting, sponsor, step work, service, get in the middle of the triangle and follow the direction, the promise will come to fruition, right? And the promises in the book, you know, around step four. So it says, resentment is an unwanted offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything. From it stem all forms of spiritual dis-ease. But we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. See, I found out that I was spiritually sick. There was a separation from me and God. And I had no power. Lack of power was my dilemma. You know, I've got a liar inside my mind, you know, that wants to tell me that this time is going to be different. You know, it talks about it on page 24. Alcoholic addicts, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power to choose in alcohol or drugs. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring to our consciousness with sufficient force the memory, the suffering, or the humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against that first one. You know, so by me getting willing, honest, and open-minded in around the step four, getting some courage, you know, to overcome it by with prayer, you know, I turned my will of my life over in step three. So I've got to have faith that God's going to see me through no matter what. Now, you know, I was very uncomfortable for the first 18 months to 2 years. Do you know what I mean? I was very uncomfortable, but I knew that I had to just keep pushing through no matter how uncomfortable it was. You know, my first sponsor used to say to me, are you in the pillar cleaning sober tonight? And I'd say, yeah. He said, there you go. That's it. You've had a good day, haven't you? Have you armed anyone today? No. Have you armed yourself today? No. Well, there you go, mate. You've had a good day. You're in the pillar cleaning sober. Give me a belt tomorrow. That was it. You know, and so it does say this. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out physically and mentally, or mentally and physically, right? So that's a promise in the book around step four. And then it also says, we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat a sick person that way. If we do, we destroy our chances of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least this is another promise. God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one, right? So, you know, love and tolerance of others is our code, right? So I have to pray for love, patience, tolerance, courage, humility, wisdom, integrity, you know, honesty. You know, I've got to pray for it and ask God to help me with that. Do you know what I mean? And then there's another promise, and it says, perhaps there's a better way. This is on page 68. We think so. This is fear, right? For we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. Listen, a drink and a drug were bigger than me. Well, but I know the God that I believe in, the creator of this you, the creator of this earth, the creator of everything, he's a lot bigger than a little drink or a drug. I've got to tell you. Do you know what I mean? I've got to tell you that. Yeah. Right. And it says, we trust in infinite God rather than our finite self. So when I can still take my will back, I can still go into a bit of fear, a bit of doubt, a bit of despondency if I'm not trusting in God. Right. One, two, and three. If they're not in place properly, right, then the rest of the steps ain't going to take place. Then it says, we are in the world to play the role he assigns. I know who I'm here to serve today. I'm here to serve God. My experience is there to benefit others, from the problem to the solution to the action that takes place in a general way. You know, it says what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. Right. And then he says, just to the extent that we do as we think, he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? And then I'm going to read this. He says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. Because when I admit my weakness, God, I can't do this. I need you, God. You know, I am weak, but in your strength, I can prevail. You know, then I start getting the courage to walk through it. You know, even before I share, I pray, before I do stuff in work environments or before I do stuff I'm working with sponsors, whatever I do, I try to bring God into it. And then God does for me what I can't do for myself. You know, and then it says, all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate for us what he can do. And we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Another promise here. At once we commence to outgrow fear. You know, and then on page 70, it says this: suppose we fall short with a chosen ideal and stumble. Now, this is the sex inventory. Does this mean that we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. That's another promise. And then it says this. It says, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory and we have written down a lot and we have listed and analyzed our resentments, and we have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality, we have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness, and we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies, for we look at them as sick people. That's another promise. And then the last one in the step four, it says this: we hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. That's another promise. And so the book tells us clearly in step five, it says this. It says, having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator, because as I say, there's a prayer behind every step, there's a spiritual principle behind every step, and there's a promise behind every step as well. So it says, we have been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator to discover the obstacles in our path. We have omitted certain defects, and we have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items. And my first sponsor, when I'd done a step five with him, he prayed. He prayed. And I like that because I could see he was taking no care. You know, he's about 20 years now, this fella. My current sponsor's 30 years. As I say, I'm in my 10th year. And I could see that he just got himself out of the way. And that gave me a bit more courage. And he right-sized me in the process. He identified me within the process. You know, he put me right in the process. You know, and at the end of that process, you know, he gave me my defects and he gave me my assets. And it says, we've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, and we have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. It says, this require I bring what I do when I'm working with a prospect, I bring them here before they finish the step four. And I'll tell them straight, whatever you share between God, yourself, and me stays between God, yourself, and me, because otherwise I'm accountable to God. So let me just reassure you that, to try and give them a bit more courage, because that was done to me as well. You know, and it says, now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our defects. You know, and so and when I got to this part, it just helped me walk through with more courage and more courage and more courage. You know, and it's a continuation, you know, because it says this in there's a story at the back of the book. He sold himself short, and it's on 263 and page 263. And he failed to continue, this guy. He was taken through the work by Dr. Bob. And it says this. I made several decisions at that time. One of them was that I would try to get a group starting in Chicago. The second was that I would have a return to Akron to attend meetings at least every 2 months until I did get a group starting in Chicago. Third, I decided I must place the program above everything else, even my family, because if I did not maintain my sobriety, I would lose my family anyway. So if I haven't got sobriety, I haven't got nothing. Do you know what I mean? If I haven't got sobriety, and I believe that everything I've got today is a gift from God and a gift from the 12-step program, And it says, because if I did not maintain my sobriety, I would lose my family. And if I did not maintain my sobriety, I would not have a job. I did not maintain my sobriety, I would not have friends left. I had few enough at that time. The next day, I went back to Chicago and started a vigorous campaign among my so-called friends or drinking companions. Their answers was always the same. If they needed it at any time, they would surely get in touch with me. I went to a minister and to a doctor whom I still knew, and they in turn asked me how long I had been sober. When I told them 6 weeks, they were polite and said that they would contact me in case they had anyone with an alcoholic problem. Needless to say, it was a year or more before they did contact me. On my trips back to Akron to get my spirits recharged and to work with other alcoholics, I would ask Dr. Bob about the delay and wonder just what was wrong with me. He would invariably reply, "When you are right and the time is right, Providence will provide. You must always be willing and continue to make contacts." A few months after I made my original trip to Akron, I was feeling pretty cocky and I didn't think my wife was treating me with proper respect. Now I was an outstanding citizen. So I set out to get drunk deliberately just to teach her what she was missing. A week later, I had to get an old friend from Akron to spend 2 days sobering me up. But he does say this at the end. He says, "That was my lesson, that one could not take a moral inventory and then file it away, that the alcoholic has to continue to take inventory every day." Every day. You know, so when I get further on into step 10 from the step 4 and 5 process, so 4 and 5 is a moral inventory from the past. So I've had the courage to look back and go right through to my resentments, my fears, my harms and my sexual conducts, and look at the exact nature of my wrongs and my defects. Then it's a continuation in step 10 to keep watching myself, you know, keep trying to watch myself. Because he says here, he says, "That was my only slip. It taught me a valuable lesson." You know, that was his only slip. It taught him a valuable lesson. Thankfully, I haven't had a slip. You know, thankfully, since I've been in recovery, you know, because this was the last thing I really tried, but it was the first thing that started to work when I'd done it. You know, and I was full of fear when I got here, you know, but thankfully, I was told by a few people, you know, and I kind of worked the first 3 steps before I actually come into recovery. You know, and it says it, you know, it says it in the book. If you're in a situation, I was actually in prison at that time, you know, and if you're in a situation where you've got to go and meet God alone, go and meet him alone. And that's what happened, similar to Bill D, but he had them coming and 12 stepping, but I had the fellow coming and carry the message to me. And then they stopped doing meetings in this actual establishment I was in London. But thankfully, the seed had been planted. Thankfully, you know, I just started practicing the principles of 1, 2, and 3. I was told not to go near step 4 at that time. Then eventually I landed up getting to the oldest 12-step provider in Europe. You know, it turned out to be an absolute blessing. You know, God brought me back to a little area in another treatment facility that I was in 15 years earlier. So God started showing up. So, I've got to have the courage, because I've turned my will and my life over in step 3, to know no matter what, God's there. He's not going to let me down. It's only me that can take my will back, yeah, and turn my back on God. But if I fall forward and I keep falling forward and not falling backwards, you know, and it's a continuation, as I say, you know, look at the review, we pray for forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. You know, for me, as a repentance, you know, and I inquire what corrective measures need to be taken when I do that review, you know, and I watch myself 10, 11, the conducive steps. But, you know, if you knew, honestly, you know, if you do a sincere step 3 and just 1, 2, and 3, you know, I can't, you can, I'm going to let you. Thy will, not mine, be done. It talks about that in on page 88. It says it in the book. It says, running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. You know, and it says on page 85, this is the nuts and bolts of it for me. It says, it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. What's my laurels? Yesterday's victories. It says, we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol, heroin, crack cocaine, you know, cocaine, prescription drugs, is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism, and alcoholism is drug addiction as well. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must, that's a must. There's 98 musts in the book. You know, there's, you know, and there's I think there's 13 messages in the book and 17 in the 12 and 12. And I think in respect to the promises, there's loads in the book, you know, and it says every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. That's all our activities. This is on page 19. The elimination of alcohol is just but a beginning. The better demonstration is in our homes, occupation, and all our affairs. I've turned my will of my life over. I've got a new employer, you know, and that's in all areas of my life. You know, and it says, how best can I serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Well, I'm going to give you an experience of mine. I had an accident 15 months ago, and I broke my wrist and I broke my shoulder. I come off an e-bike, and it was quite painful. And I was in the hospital, and they couldn't get a clear x-ray, and they give me a little bit of codeine phosphate, a little bit of Oromorph, and a bit of fear started kicking. I thought, oh my God, I don't want this. My spirit started to feel a bit sick. And they give me a little bit of Codamol to go home with, right? And on the fourth day, I didn't like it, but I knew I was in a bit of pain. I needed to get over that initial 3 days. Then I rang a doctor, my doctor, and I had a step two experience. God done for me what I couldn't do for myself. I said, listen, I said, this give me, God give me the courage. I said, listen, I don't want to be on any opioids or codeine-based medication. So you need to switch me over to a non-opioid and a non-codeine-based medication. I said, because I can't take that stuff. You know, and that took courage for me to do that. But God done for me what I couldn't do for myself. And what turned out to be the beauty of it was Zoom, because I couldn't get to in-person meetings for a couple of months. Just, you know, after a couple of months when I started to get a bit better, then I could get back. You know, I do both. I do Zoom and I do in-person meetings as well. And I just want to read this. It's in the foreword to the fourth. And it says this. It says, while our literature has preserved the integrity of the AA message, sweeping changes in society as a whole are reflected in new customs and practices within the fellowship. Taking advantage of technological advances, I've met so many people on Zoom at conventions, unity days, who I've met on Zoom, you know, and that's the beauty of this, you know what I mean? The recovery world has opened right up, not just, you know, all around the world, yeah? You know, I've had friends come over from Canada, America, you know, and been able to take them down to the doggerel, you know, and all that, you know, Winchester Cathedral, you know, it's fantastic. It's lovely. It's you know, it's been turned out to be really, you know, I'm blessed. I really am. Do you know what I mean? I'm really content. I'm really blessed. And it says this. It says, taking advantage of technological advances, you acknowledge, for example, AA members with computers can participate in meetings online, sharing with fellow alcoholic addicts across the country and all around the world. Fundamentally, though, the difference between the electronic meeting and the home group around the corner is only one of format. In any meeting, anywhere, AA share experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and to help other alcoholic addicts. Modem to modem or face to face, AA speak the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. I'll leave it there. Thank you for asking me to be a service.